Hello again. This is Pat, and I'm reading from the Clinton Journal for Friday, May the 22nd. Front page. Front page has a wonderful picture of all the graduates from the Clinton High School. In stories, city gives the TIF planning demo report. Gordon Woods reporting. Tony Harris gave a report on economic development Tuesday during the Clinton City Council meeting. Harris said a planned vote on annexation of land coincided with the city's TIF tax increment financing district planning and our strategic efforts to drive economic development on the west end of the city, specifically off of Kleeman Drive, Harris said. This is a vital step in the city's long-term commercial and economic growth. Harris also addressed the demolition by the city of 119 East Main Street. He said work was scheduled to begin on Tuesday. Contractors were expected to fence off the site either Thursday or Friday this week. The building was earlier taken over by the city and deemed unsafe. Harris said parking along the south side of the property would be off limits during the demolition process. Harris also touched briefly on another local project, identifying a site on Sunset Court across from Sunset Inn and Suites that would be will be a construction location of a fourplex unit. I believe that is Lot 5. It's going to be a fourplex commercial unit, Harris said. He said that was expected to start within a few weeks. Clinton celebrates America 250, July the 3rd through the 5th. Special to the Clinton Journal. Clinton's celebration of the United States' 250th birthday will be held July the 3rd through the 5th, 2026, on Mr. Lincoln Square. In addition to the live music, a parade and fireworks, there are a variety of ways that everyone can participate in this historic event. Flag your yard. For just $25, committee members will fill your yard with small American flags and make your home part of the celebration. You can pick up a form at the Vespasian Warner Public Library. Sign up by June 26th at 2026. Let Freedom Ring Parade. Individuals and organizations are invited to be part of the America 250 Parade that will march down West Main Street from the First Baptist Church to the square. Entry forms are available at the library and must be sent to Edith Brady Loney. Contests. During the event, there will be a donut eating contest, sack race, Uncle Sam look-alike contest, baby race, pioneer race, and bike decorating contest. Winners will receive prizes. You can sign up through the committee's Facebook page at Clinton Celebrates America's 250th Birthday - Clinton, Illinois. Car show. The committee will host a car show on Sunday, July the 5th. There will be a $10 per vehicle registration fee. Cornhole tournament. Is it really a Midwestern event without cornhole? Gather a team to see if you have what it takes to be the champion. There will be a $20 per team entry fee. Cookie baking contest. DeWitt County HCE will judge the best cookie baker in Clinton. You can register at the library, Clinton's Chamber of Commerce, or the DeWitt County Extension Office. Registration closes June the 26th. Sponsors and volunteers. Sponsors can drop off donations at the Craig Bennett American Legion Post, number 103, 2019 North Elizabeth Street, Clinton, Illinois. Sponsors who make their donation before June the 1st will be noted on T-shirts and banners at the event. Anyone interested in volunteering for the event should contact Bobby Perryman at 217-925-5174. That's 217-925-5174. Also in the news, Isaiah White, It's on the ONU Spring Dean's list. Bourbonnais, Olivet Nazarene University has announced its Spring 2026 Dean's List honorees. To qualify inclusion on the Dean's List, a student must be enrolled as a full-time undergraduate student and attain a semester grade point average of 3.5 or higher on a 4-point scale. Among the local residents recognized was Isaiah White of Clinton. From the op-ed page today, for Domestic Violence, the On Point column by Richard Koritz. Years ago, I was asked what kind of law I specialized in. My response was sex, sin, and violence. The remark may have sounded flippant to anyone not familiar with the reality of the criminal justice system. Unfortunately, the remark was deadly serious. After the events of the DeWitt County this past month, the term deadly serious is really more real. A beautiful mother of two preschoolers lost her life in what appears to be an act of domestic violence. Cassie Fothery was just 34 years old when she lost her life. Her husband has been charged with her murder, and a trial is pending. I have chosen not to mention his name and to remind everyone reading this that he is presumed innocent under the law until at this time. This case brings home both because of the enormity of my profession. I am retired but still do some contract work in Logan County. On most Thursday mornings, I am in court in Lincoln representing children or their parents in abuse and neglect cases. I see violence on a weekly basis, and while I am long ago accepted the truth about that people harm one another, it still bothers me when one harms another. Violence towards children and the defenseless is simply reprehensible. I remember Cassie as a gangly and klutzy young lady who would occasionally sit in my office after school waiting for her mother to get off work. She never got in the way of anyone and was always a pleasant young lady. She would grow up to be a beautiful mother with two young children. The sad irony of this office situation is that my other secretary was the grandmother of the three young children that were drowned in Clinton Lake. For clarification, I was not the state's attorney when these deaths occurred. What I am is a father and a grandfather who is far closer to death and violence than most people. Man's inhumanity to mankind has always been on display. Sex, sin, and violence is a part of our lives. I wish it weren't. This article was written in the hope that others can see the signs of violence emerging in families before those signs lead to violence or death. This article is not always asking you to meddle in the normal travails of lives of others, but it is encouraging you to intervene when the potential for violence occurs. Typical signs of violence is when a spouse, partner, are overly jealous or distrustful of their spouses or partners. If you cannot trust your spouse, it is time to talk to the marriage counselor. Anger against children in the home by adults is a sure sign of potential problems in the home. Stepchildren seem to be especially prone to being the victims of domestic violence. Financial distress in the home also appears to be a precursor to many domestic violence situations. Your kind words of support to a stressed-out parent may be what saves a child's life. Seniors mentoring, not dictating, is a tried-and-true measure of providing safety in a child's home. Listen to your children and grandchildren's concern. Most are the concerns of simply being a child. However, sometimes that child has some very heavy concerns and needs an adult to confide in. Just being available for your children and grandchildren is, in all honesty, great preventative medicine for many of the difficulties of youth. In those circumstances where you observe or suspect violence or abuse may be occurring, don't hesitate to call DCFS hotline or your local law enforcement agency. Children need adults to care and are willing to advocate for them. Sometimes the victim of abuse is an adult. That person also needs someone to make a call for them if they are unable to advocate for themselves. Simply stated, we are each other's our brother's keepers and have moral duty to protect the unprotected. Richard Koritz is an Illinois native, attorney, and former DeWitt County State's Attorney. In our health column this morning, Reflecting on Progress by Deborah Johnson, MD. It's human nature to tell stories about the past, and doctors aren't immune to that impulse. The second-year medical students rotating through my clinic have me reflecting on my own years as a fledgling physician and the changes I've seen in my decades of practice. I remember one evening spent in the pediatric ICU watching a toddler who had meningitis. At one point, I turned and bumped into the bed rail, which came crashing down. Both my preceptor and I jumped, and I probably even shrieked. The child, however, didn't even blink. That's when we knew her illness had left her profoundly deaf. The seasoned pediatrician I was with that month had started practice before the introduction of the Hib vaccine. As we talked about what we could do now for the child in our care, he told me stories about the old days when the pediatric ICU in Sioux Valley Hospital would potentially have 2 to 3 children being treated for meningitis. Less than 10 years later, our immunized patient was the first case they had in months. Early in my practice, winter months would see at least a child or two here in Brookings Hospital hospitalized with rotavirus, which any day the occasional adult. They would be with us for a few days or even a week, getting IV fluids until the diarrhea slowed down. One first vaccine had rare but serious side effects and was pulled off the market. The vaccine we've been using for nearly 20 years now has turned the illness into something that rarely lands a child in our hospital. To be sure, we still see rotavirus infections. It's just that far fewer patients are sick enough to need an IV. We got a new weapon against another common childhood scourge. RSV has been a terror for a long time that I've been in practice. It results in hospitalization of nearly 2% of children before they turn one. We now have two ways to protect infants. The first is a traditional vaccine used to give to expectant mothers late in their pregnancy. Mom's immune system responds by developing antibodies, which transfers to the infant. Since baby's immature system can't respond to the vaccine we have for RSV, we can't give that to them directly. However, we have an antibody against RSV that can be given directly to newborns. We have had something similar for most of my career, but it was an expensive and had to be given monthly so that we only used it on the highest risk children. This new version is much less costly and requires only one shot. These strategies don't teach the baby's immune system to fight the infection. Instead, they provide temporary soldiers to wage the battle. That protection will fade, and the baby's immune system will still have to learn to fight RSV by catching it. but we will have a delayed that date until the child is older and less likely to get terribly sick. I am optimistic that RSV 2 will be something we will see, but that someday the suffering will end. And I wonder what my young colleagues today will tell their future students about medicine in the good old days. Dr. Deborah Johnson is a family medicine physician at Alvira Medical Group Brookings in Brookings, South Dakota. She serves as the Prairie Doc volunteer host during the 24th season, providing health education based on science built on trust. And also in health news, Do Men Get Osteoporosis? By Jim Miller, the Savvy Senior. Dear Savvy Senior, can a man get osteoporosis, or is it mostly a problem for women? When I fell and broke my wrist last winter, the ER doctor told me I might have osteoporosis, but I never followed up. What can you tell me? Almost 70. Dear Almost, a lot of people think that osteoporosis is only a woman's issue, but men can get it too, especially as they get older. And like women, men often don't have what until they, excuse me, men often don't realize they have it until a bone breaks. Osteoporosis is often called a silent disease because it weakens bones over time, making them thin, brittle, and more likely to break, usually without any warning signs. While women are often four times more likely to develop it, men aren't immune. About 2 million American men have osteoporosis, and another 12 million have low bone density, known as osteopenia, which can eventually progress to the disease. One of the biggest problems is that men are less likely to be tested. Even after a fracture, many often do not get tested. Doctors often overlook it, and men sometimes may not realize they're at risk. The bones often are affected are the hip, spine, and wrist, and hip fractures in particular can lead to serious complications and long recoveries. Who is at risk? In women, menopause speeds up the bone loss. In men, it usually happens more gradually, but age is still a major factor. Your risk depends on about 70, and if you're thin or underweight, smoke, drink heavily, have a parent of osteoporosis, or have already broken a bone, as this person has. Certain medical conditions can also increase your risk. These include rheumatoid arthritis, celiac disease, low testosterone, overactive thyroid, COPD and kidney or liver disease, neurological conditions as Parkinson's disease, multiple sclerosis, or a past stroke can raise the risk because they affect balance and mobility. Long-term use of corticosteroids, prostate cancer treatments, acid reflux disease, antidepressants, and anti-seizure disease can cause problems. Testing. Next is bone density test. All men 70 or older should talk to their doctors about being screened. Men over 50 who have had fracture or other risk disease should get tested. To scan is a simple process. It's painless, takes only a few minutes. Medicare and most provide insurance plans and cover it. Prevention. When it comes to protecting their bones, the basis really matters. Get enough calcium from foods like low-fat milk, yogurt, cheese, and leafy green vegetables, beans, almonds, and canned salmon and sardines. Men under 50 need about 1,000 milligrams a day. Those 71 and older need 1,200 milligrams per day. Vitamin D is just as important because it helps your body absorb calcium. Most adults over 50 need 800 to 1,000 international units daily through sunlight, food, or a supplement if needed. Regular weight-bearing exercise, such as food, such as walking, a long strength training, and 2 to 3 times a week of strength training, and that helps build the maintain bone. It also improves balance, which can prevent falls. You should also avoid alcohol and limit caffeine. Treatment. If treatment shows significant bone loss, medications such as Fosamax, Actonel, Reclast, Prolia, Fortiol, and Timlos may be prescribed. Your doctor can explain the benefits and possibility and side effects and help you decide what is appropriate. Since you have already had a fracture, it is not something to ignore. A simple test and a plan now can help you stay strong and avoid most serious breaks down the road. In the news, the Church of Christ to host Community Blood Drive with Impact Life on June the 4th. Clinton, the Church of Christ will hold a Community Blood Drive with Impact Life, the provider of blood components for local hospitals. The blood drive will be held from 12 p.m. to 5 p.m. on Thursday, June the 4th at 5450 Evans Drive inside the auditorium. You need to make appointments. To donate, contact Stephen Brad at 217-935-5058 and use the code 7139 to locate the drive. Appointments are requested. You may also call Impact Life at 800-747-5401 to schedule. Donor eligibility criteria. Potential donors must be at least 17 years of age, 16 with parental permission, and weigh more than 110 pounds. A photo ID is required to donate. For questions about eligibility, please call the Impact Life at 800-747-5401. Donors who last gave blood on or before 4/9/26 are eligible to give at this drive. About blood donations. Blood donation is a safe, simple procedure that takes about 45 minutes to 1 hour. Individuals with diabetes or controlled high blood pressure may be accepted as eligible donors. Impact Life is a nonprofit community organization providing blood products and services to more than 100 hospitals and emergency medical services providers in Illinois, Iowa, Missouri, and Wisconsin, as well as researchers and resource-sharing partners across the county. Across the country. For more information on blood inventories, donor promotions, and more, see www.bloodcenter.org. Successful donors will get an Impact Life donor reward for their choice, such as an e-gift card with many redemption options, donation to the charity or bonus, or use on our online donor rewards store. Thank you to those who helped with the Soldier's Plot restoration dedication. I would like to thank everyone who helped the DeWitt County Genealogical Society at the dedication ceremony Saturday. Unfortunately, it was interrupted by rain and had to be completed at the carriage barn at the homestead, but many hands helped to pull it together. Thanks to Joey Long for her words and unveiling of the new informational sign. Also to Walt and Linda Hunt Oler for their vocalization of the national anthem and the battle hymn of the Republic, and Pastor Scott Marsh, who delivered a solemn blessing. Kudos to American Legion Post 635, who performed a tribute to the veterans in attendance, 21-gun salute and taps. Thanks to Randy Rice and his staff for setting up and taking down chairs at the cemetery. The homestead staff and the several board members went out of their way to help us carry out the help out at the carriage barn. Last but not least, many thanks to the volunteers who lent a hand over the past years to restore the 80 tombstones in the soldiers' plot, in particular Leslie Hunt, Cheryl Lehman, Jared Hooker, and Joanne Manley. It would not have been possible without you. Sincerely, Terry Lemmel, President, DeWitt County Geological Society. A note about Clinton Memorial Day. Hello, Clinton area. For our upcoming Memorial Day observation, our Clinton area veterans and our Clinton area scouts were out on Monday placing flags on veterans' graves at Woodlawn Cemetery. We do miss some veterans' graves. It is not intentional. We are working on a way to map every grave, and it is an ongoing process. If someone has a concept to handle this, it would be greatly appreciated. There have been many helpful items over the years, and we'd be glad to add to any of this ongoing project. Because we do this by human hands, veterans, scouts, citizens, of the community, all working on the ground can accidentally miss a veteran, even if they are marked. And for the obituaries today, we have Jacob D. J.D. Johnson, Bloomington. Jacob D. J.D. Johnson, born on February the 5th, 1942, passed away surrounded by the love of his family on May the 7th, 2026 at OSF in Bloomington. A celebration of life was held for J.D. Johnson at Little Galagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagalagal Road, Clinton. The family is requesting all to bring the memory and story to share to honor this great man. Corla Ann Hagenbruch, Hagenbruch, of Urbana, Corla Ann Hagenbruch, passed away peacefully on April the 27th, 2026, at Carl Hospital, Urbana, leaving a lasting impression of strength, faith, selfless service, and unwavering love. A memorial service will be held on Saturday, May the 23rd, 2026 at 2 p.m. at the Kingdom Hall of Jehovah's Witnesses, 2602 West Bloomington Road in Champaign. And we have the third obituary, Mary Woodward Priest, Santa Rosa, California. Mary Woodward Priest died on May the 14th, 2026 in Santa Rosa, California. A graveside service is scheduled for 11 a.m. on Wednesday, May the 22nd at Woodlawn Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 10 to 11 a.m. on Friday at Calvert Funeral Home in Clinton. Congratulations to all of the graduates, and I will be back for next week. Have a good week.